ನಮೋ ವಿಷ್ಣು ಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಬುದ್ಧಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮತಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವಿದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿಧಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣೆ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಸುನಿವಾರಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶ ಧಾರಿಣೆ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ಸ್ಯಾಂಗ್ ದಿಸ್ ಭಜನ್ ವನ್ ಹಿ ವಾಸ್ ಆನ್ ದ ಬೋಟ್ ಸ್ಟಿಲ್ ಜಲದೂತ ಹಿ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ಲ್ಯಾಂಡೆಡ್ ಆಫ್ಟರ್ 36 ಡೇಸ್ ಆನ್ ಸಿ at the Boston Harbor. There was delay after delay all along the trip. So finally when they landed in Boston, then also, although Prabhupada wasn't going to alight in Boston, he did go very briefly with the captain, Mr. Pandya, to see the Boston city early in the morning. Early in the morning, everything is closed in America. So he saw buildings, maybe some people. Then he had to get onto the boat again, and it took another 2 days for the boat to finally land in New York. So while on the boat, just before landing in New York, Srila Prabhupada wrote this bhajan. And he expressed to Sri Krishna his utter feelings of incapacity to fulfill this order that has been given to him by his spiritual master. And that is to bring the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the English language to the Western countries. Finally, he says, I don't know why you brought me to this Ugrastan. Ugrastan is, well, that was America. Ugrastan means this horrible place. It just took Prabhupada a few minutes to figure out where America was at. Full of Rajagun and Tamagun. Prabhupada saw it all immediately. Whatever dreams he had, because he was always dreaming to go to New York City. Everybody else wanted to go to London and other places in Europe, but no, Prabhupada, from the very start, he was scheming how to get to New York. Finally, he had reached, and he realized the truth of America. So he said, I don't know why you brought me to this place, but I'm just like a puppet, right? Just like a puppet, a wooden puppet. They move according to the strings of the master. So he says, if you want me to dance, then make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. And that's exactly how Prabhupada carried on his preaching. When he landed in New York, just before he landed, when he was still on the boat, he was able to make a telephone call to Gopal Agarwal in Butler, Pennsylvania, to inform him that he had arrived. He also called Dr. Mishra, but Dr. Mishra didn't pick up. He was hoping Dr. Mishra would also meet him, although he didn't know Dr. Mishra. He didn't know either person. Dr. Mishra, his actual spiritual name was Brahmananda Saraswati, and his guru lived in Bombay, Bhagavan Das. He was a Shankaracharya follower, and he had begun the Yoga Society in America, coming just a few years before Srila Prabhupada arrived. So finally, when Prabhupada did land, and he went through the customs, the formalities for entering America, Gopal Agarwal had sent someone to meet him and put him on the bus to come to Butler. It's a 10-hour ride. So Prabhupada had just spent 38 days on the boat. He went from Calcutta to the Bay of Bengal, Indian Ocean, Colombo, around to Cochin. Cochin, he had to stay for just staying in the ocean for 2 days before they allowed them to alight. There at Cochin, 5 boxes of Prabhupada's books, he watched them get put on the boat. Then from Cochin, they entered into the Arabian Sea, and it was there that Prabhupada had his problems. From the 25th of August to the 31st, Prabhupada couldn't write anything. It was Ekadasi, the Ekadasi after Janmashtami, Ananda Ekadasi. And Prabhupada had fasted the whole day. He couldn't eat anyway because of the seasickness. He fasted fully that day. And the time for breaking his fast, he still couldn't eat. So 2 days practically fasting. And that was when he had his heart attacks. So then after 5 days of not being able to write anything, he finally, on the 31st, he said, "I'm coming up a little bit." And then he began to describe his journey again, from the Arabian Sea to Port Suez, then the Red Sea, then Port Said, then the Mediterranean, which was the kindest to Prabhupada. No problems there, no seasickness. He described how Sicily on one side, Algeria, Morocco on the other side, Gibraltar, then finally Atlantic Ocean. Atlantic Ocean in September, that's hurricane season, just as it is here. We have so many cyclones, tufans. So usually it's 10-foot waves, lightning, fog, thunder, but this time it was crystal clear the whole trip across the Atlantic. And everyone in the boat, including the captain and his wife, they begged Prabhupada, "You come back with us, because we've never seen the Atlantic Ocean so calm." And Prabhupada said, he confirmed, he said, "Yes, that is because Krishna has taken charge of the ship. He is rowing the oars." So Prabhupada understood that Krishna really wanted him to reach America. So finally, New York, he gets on the bus, 10-hour trip to Pittsburgh. Reaches there, midnight, Gopal Agarwal picks him up, another hour, 2 hours to get to Butler. Now Butler is just a small, in America we have a lot of small towns. And in this one small town there were so many churches, there was a college, Slippery Rock College, and most of the people were Christian. So this was Prabhupada's first experience to see how the American people lived. And he found that the people were actually intelligent, educated, and open to spiritual enlightenment. So Prabhupada made an arrangement. We've heard so many times how when Prabhupada, he didn't change his lifestyle, even when he was in the Butler, in their house, the Agarwal's house. He still bathed 3 times a day. He would wash his own clothes and stretch his clothes out on the lawn in the front yard. And he would sit outside in the backyard of the neighbors. He would sit on their chair to chant his japa. And he would cook. So he cooked for the family because he understood that they also liked his cooking. And then he arranged that in the evening time, the Agarwals would call their intelligent friends, because Mr. Agarwal was an engineer. They had a lot of intelligent friends. And although they smoked and they had all kinds of other habits, Prabhupada, every evening, he would sit and speak with these people 7:30 to 9 and answer their spiritual questions. Now, Sally Agarwal, who was very intelligent and respected Prabhupada just like a father-in-law, she arranged for him to have an article in the local newspaper, the Butler Eagle. And for them, it was such a big event that a Swami had come from India. They put his picture on the front page. And from that advertisement, other people became interested. And he started getting invitations to speak at churches. And the head of the head professor of the philosophy department, he invited Prabhupada to speak to all the philosophy students at the college. So Prabhupada understood that, yes, it was like a reconnaissance, because the Agarwals, they thought that Prabhupada had just come to America to sell his books. They didn't realize that Prabhupada was planning a whole revolution of the youth in America. So when Prabhupada saw that even those who weren't the youth, even the adults, they were open to spiritual life, He then gained courage, and he decided after spending a month there at Butler that if he was going to start a world revolution, it wasn't going to happen in Butler, Pennsylvania. So he informed the Agarwals that he was going to leave. He was going to New York. On his way, he stopped in the biggest city in Pennsylvania, that's Philadelphia. He had made contact with the head of the Sanskrit department, Dr. Norman Brown. And for 2 days, he lectured there at Dr. Brown's Sanskrit classes and presented his books also to the university. So after that success, he went to New York and he met with Dr. Mishra for the first time. Dr. Mishra, he was actually a neurosurgeon, an MD. But when he came to America, because he was combining yoga with psychiatry and the East and the West, his ideas were the same as Prabhupada's. But he was Shankar philosophy, impersonalist. So he was teaching his students, for instance, one of the first disciples of Prabhupada, his name was Haridas. Prabhupada made him the temple president at the first San Francisco temple. Haridas, his name was Harvey Cohen. So Harvey Cohen had just lost his parents. He was in a great turmoil, and he decided to try out Dr. Mishra's ashram in the hills of New York. So he went there one weekend, and they were all meditating. Dr. Mishra had drawn a big circle on the wall, and everyone was meditating on this circle. And he just couldn't figure out how to meditate on a circle. So he left the meditation and went to his room. And he had noticed Prabhupada sitting there next to Dr. Mishra. And as he was sitting in his room, Prabhupada comes to his room and begins to preach to him about bhakti yoga. And everything made sense. So then when everyone went back to New York City, Harvey started visiting Prabhupada in his little office at 72nd Street. And Harvey, because he lived in Greenwich Village where all the youth lived, when he would go back to his home, he would tell all of his friends at the cafes, at the restaurants, about this Swami who was up on the upper portion of New York City. And they started coming to meet Prabhupada and to attend his Bhagavad Gita classes 3 times a week. Then that fateful incident happened where Prabhupada assumed that it was the sweeper, the janitor of the building. Someone broke into his room and stole the only things that he possessed, which was a typewriter and a tape recorder. So then Prabhupada, he didn't know what to do. So those youth convinced Prabhupada that you come to where we live because we all want to hear what you're teaching. So then Harvey, he had a loft in the Bowery, which is just next to the East Village. He said, you can stay in my loft. There's one boy staying there. It's a big place. You can stay there. So Prabhupada moved then to the Bowery so that he could begin preaching to the youth. In the Bowery, on these AIR lofts, artists in residence, there were artists and musicians living there. They started coming to Prabhupada's classes. Some of them wanted to learn Sanskrit. Some of them just wanted to do kirtan with their musical instruments with Prabhupada. So the young people of America were becoming attracted to Prabhupada at that time. And then in the Bowery, Krishna arranged for him to move on again. One time, because he was sharing with this young boy, 18-year-old boy, who happened to still be taking intoxication, he asked, his name was David Allen, and Srila Prabhupada used to call him Mr. David. So Prabhupada asked him, please don't keep the soap on the floor of the shower, because I'm an old man, I might slip. And then David, because he was under the influence of intoxication, he started to chase Prabhupada as if to kill him all around the apartment. And Prabhupada, he had to escape with nothing but his bead bag. He didn't know what to do. He was not worried, but he just didn't know how to handle this situation. So he went to the friendliest of all of the youth, and that was Michael Grant, who became Mukunda Das, and explained to him what happened, and Mukunda didn't take it very seriously. And then Prabhupada explained to him the Bengali proverb, Guru Vidyamara, that the student, they learn from the guru, and when they've learned, then they kill the guru and sit in his place. So then Mukunda understood how serious it was, and he arranged. Srila Prabhupada was so tolerant. He arranged for him to stay at another artist's home. His name was Carl Jurgens. He later became initiated as Karlapati. Carl Jurgens was staying with his girlfriend in that apartment, and Prabhupada had to stay on their couch. And Prabhupada explained later that I would try to sleep at night, but sometimes they weren't sleeping, indicating that they were doing other horrible things. So Prabhupada was so tolerant, but what could he do? So as quickly as possible, Michael Grant found 26 Second Avenue, and Prabhupada arranged to move into 26 Second Avenue. And there, all the youth that had been visiting Prabhupada, they went into the apartment, they picked up Prabhupada's belongings, and they had a whole procession moving all of the things to 26 Second Avenue. They arranged also for Prabhupada to have his own little apartment. And Prabhupada stuck up a little piece of paper with some tape saying Bhagavad Gita classes Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and the time. And that, because the youth lived there, it was at the East Village, and that was where many of the youth had come to congregate to find out about an alternative lifestyle. So the youth that passed by there, they saw that little note, and they started coming to Prabhupada's classes. And then Prabhupada would take walks, and he would meet people also. One day, Howard Wheeler, he was a professor of English, he was walking on the street, and he saw Prabhupada. And he and Keith Ham, who became Kirtanananda, they had just come back from India. And in fact, they had taken the same steamship that Prabhupada had taken to arrive. They went there by steamship. They couldn't find a guru. So then they came back unsuccessful. And there Howard sees a Swami walking right on the road on the streets of New York City. And Howard goes up to him. He said, are you from India? And Prabhupada said, yes. And you? He said, no, I'm from America. And then Prabhupada invited him. He said, I'm giving Bhagavad Gita class. You come, you bring your friends. So that evening, Howard brought his roommates. And that way, gradually, more and more people started coming to 26 Second Avenue. Now, Mukunda, because the group, just like when Prabhupada was passing through the oceans, Prabhupada noted in his diary, he said, the water in Bay of Bengal is different from the water in the Indian Ocean. The water in Arabian Sea is different. Each ocean, they don't mix. They have their own water and there's a demarcation line. So the different classes of people who were coming to hear Prabhupada, first at 72nd Street, they didn't come down to the Bowery. They stayed there. And the Bowery people who were coming to hear Prabhupada's classes, very few of them followed Prabhupada to 26 Second Avenue. So now he had a new group of youth. But some did, and that was, for instance, Mukunda and his girlfriend Janaki. So they were part of the first initiation that Prabhupada held. So the first Janmashtami, when Prabhupada turned 70 years old, that was held in the port of Cochin. Now, exactly 1 year later, Prabhupada held a Janmashtami festival, and he made 11 disciples. Now, hardly did the disciples understand what it meant to become a disciple, but they did understand that they had to follow four principles. We all know what those principles are, so I won't repeat them. So then they saw Prabhupada chanting, so they made their own japa beads. In the early days, no one had tulsi beads from India. We had to make our own japa beads. And Prabhupada chanted on each and every one. There were 11 of them. 11 malas he chanted and gave them their malas, gave them their names. They didn't know what their names meant. Gradually, each one understood. And then, 15 days later, he had a second initiation. In that initiation, Prabhupada initiated Brahmananda, Kirtanananda, Achyutananda, and Satsvaru. So Prabhupada, he was getting genuine, dedicated students. And they started to live with Prabhupada because Prabhupada had his own little rooms upstairs. They would put out blankets on 26A in the storefront. And Achyutananda, his name was Charlie, one day he was coming, he was visiting and hearing the lectures, and he understood that, he said that Prabhupada was like the prime minister of the galaxy. He could answer any question that anyone had directly from the Vedas, and he would quote the slokas. Achyutananda would ask him, he said, how do I practice Raja Yoga? Prabhupada said, well, there are two types of Raja Yoga. There's the yoga that's the king of yoga, and there's the yoga that the kings practice. So then Prabhupada explained the whole Raja Yoga system to him, and Achyutananda couldn't believe it. All of the questions that he had been asking the swamis and the different people, no one could give him proper answers. Prabhupada answered everything. So Achyutananda, one day he was sitting in his room, and suddenly he hears a crack in the ceiling. He runs out of the room, and the whole ceiling collapses. Some, you know, there's an expression when the ceiling, well, it actually happened, and it was 9:30 at night. So he ran to Prabhupada. He said, can I stay with he said, yeah, go downstairs. The boys will tell you what to do. So Prabhupada had just told them the story of Mrigari and how Narada Muni had seen the flapping animals. And no one had heard that word flapping before, so the devotees are still laughing about that, how Prabhupada described that. And how Mrigari became a full-time devotee, he wouldn't even kill an ant. So Brahmananda told Achyutananda, he said, we have to put out blankets on the floor because they're rats. So they were all sleeping there at night, and Brahmananda felt what he thought was some rats. So he got up, he jumped up, he turned on the lights, and actually it was Garga Muni, he was tickling him. And he said, you were flapping. And then Prabhupada told the story of liquid beauty. And when Achyutananda heard that story, he said, this is old school. None of the uptown swamis would ever talk about liquid beauty. We all know the story of liquid beauty, right? So Achyutananda could understand that this was a genuine guru who's going to teach him real knowledge. So he was very attached to Prabhupada. Now Mukunda, who was from the Loft group, he decided that he had done his duty to Prabhupada. He got him set up at 26 Second Avenue. So he had always wanted to go to India. Now he didn't know that at that time, if you read the newspapers in 1965, India was in the middle of two wars, one war with Pakistan and one war with China. And Indira Gandhi, she had just legalized cow slaughter. So within the country, there were huge riots going on. All the sadhus, all the Brahmins, they were having riots and protests that she had done this. And there was a drought going on. So Mukunda had this dream. He went to Prabhupada. He said, we're going to go now to India Is there anyone you know in India that we could possibly meet? Prabhupada gave him the pundit's name in Chippewada. So then Mukunda, thinking that he would do some good for Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, you've established things very nicely here, your center here in New York, but actually, more youth is in San Francisco. That's the hippie center. So I think it's a good idea if you start a center over there also. So then he offered his obeisances to Prabhupada, and as he was getting up, Prabhupada said to him, I would like you to start that center in San Francisco. So it planted a seed in Mukunda's heart. So then he left. They went to meet their old friends, Shyamsundar and Malati, who were Sam and Melanie at the time. They told them about the Swami. And then Joan was with them, that's Jamuna. They decided, let's do, and Mukunda, he started having nightmares about going to India. That drummers, because he was a musician, drummers were coming to attack him. They were capturing him. So the other people, Sam, Melanie, Joan, they all wanted Prabhupada to come to the West Coast. So Mukunda and Janaki decided, yes, this is what Prabhupada asked us to do. So they went to San Francisco to start that temple and invite Prabhupada there. Now Harvey Cohen, he had moved to San Francisco and they made him the temple president. Harvey Cohen was very intelligent. He understood that you can't run the San Francisco temple like you're running the New York temple. Because, again, it's just like the waters. People in New York are not the same as people in California, right? Sunny California. Whole different class of people. So they made an arrangement to have a huge rock festival and invite Prabhupada to that rock festival, and that way we could get everyone to chant Hare Krishna. So they invited all these big rock stars, Grateful Dead, Moby Grape, nobody that any of you have heard of except for the Americans, all these famous rock stars, and they called up Prabhupada. And they said, Prabhupada, you have to come. It was January 1966, and we made a big concert for you. So then they sent Prabhupada a ticket. This was his first flight in his life. He came to San Francisco, and they made an advertisement in the newspapers that the Swami is coming. Everyone put on your best hippie clothes, bring some incense, bring some flowers, and come to the airport. So about 50 hippies showed up, including Allen Ginsberg. Now at that time in San Francisco, they had just had the hugest bee-in. The bee-in is like Kumbh Mela for the hippies. 100,000 hippies had just come to San Francisco, and they were all in San Francisco. And Allen Ginsberg, he was the leader of that bee-in. And Allen Ginsberg, wherever he went, because he had gone to India, and he had seen a lady saint in Bengal singing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And he had gotten himself a harmonium. And any time he had a bee-in, he would go all over the country, he would start out with the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So all the hippies already knew about Hare Krishna. But Allen Ginsberg, he had his own way of doing things because he wasn't following the principles. He came to meet Prabhupada, and Prabhupada, when he saw the beautiful reception, Prabhupada started to dance in the airport, and then everyone started to dance with him, and they were all throwing flowers, going with him to the car, and they brought Prabhupada to the new temple. Now, Prabhupada's original desire was that he have a Radha Krishna temple in New York City. He was looking for buildings, writing to the Singhaniyas in Kanpur, trying to get support from the Gaudiya Mutt to start a Radha Krishna temple. So what Mukunda and the other devotees did was, they got a storefront bigger than Matchless Gifts, And they put on the, as the signboard, not matches gifts, Radha Krishna Temple. So finally Prabhupada had his Radha Krishna Temple. Of course, there was no Radha Krishna. There were no deities. Now, another thing, Harvey Cohen, he was an artist. And when Harvey Cohen first went to visit Prabhupada at 72nd Street, he saw that Prabhupada had a little picture of the Panchatattva with all their arms up. And they all, because they were grihasthas, they all had hair. And Prabhupada would often look at this picture. It was the only thing that he was worshipping at that time, Panchatattva. So Prabhupada asked Harvey Cohen to paint the Panchatattva. So Harvey Cohen thought that they were women. So he painted them and he put breasts on them. And then Prabhupada said, no, that's not right. So then Harvey thought that he hadn't made the breasts big enough. So he made the breasts bigger. And Prabhupada, he said, you crazy artist. Just paint it the way it is. So these paintings, they were our worshipable deities. Harvey painted the first one. And then Prabhupada taught the artist by grid system. You take that little picture, you make a grid, and then you take a big canvas and you make the grid, and you exactly copy. And in all of the temples that Prabhupada started, we worship this picture that Prabhupada had brought from India of Panchatattva. They were our deities. It wasn't until when Prabhupada came there, they had the big concert, Malati picked up Lord Jagannath one day, brought it to Prabhupada. Then Prabhupada, he initiated the worship of Lord Jagannath. And he decided that would be the best type of worship in America, because Lord Jagannath is most merciful to the mleches. Bimal Krishna Prabhu, he sent a little information thing to us a few days ago about vegetarianism and non-vegetarianism in India. So in Orissa, they're like 99.47% non-vegetarian. But that's where Lord Jagannath lives. And they take the Jagannath Mahaprasadam, they purchase it, they take it home, and mix it with their fish. Prabhupada explained that. So Lord Jagannath, he is very merciful to the meat eaters, to the mleches. And Prabhupada, he had Shamsundar carve like 3 feet big Jagannath Baladevan Subhadra, because he sent Malati back to get the other two figurines. Shamsundar, he built the temple, he built the altar, he carved the deities, and then Prabhupada started for the first time deity worship. And he taught the devotees they should have a plate and a candle. And everyone should get a chance to offer this candle to Lord Jagannath. And everyone should bring something as an offering. Someone would bring biscuits, someone would bring fruit, someone would bring flowers, whatever they had. They would bring an offer to Lord Jagannath. So Prabhupada was very gradually initiating deity worship into Krishna consciousness. Then, now Lord Jagannath was there. Of course, Lord Jagannath had to have a Rath Yatra. So they made a Rath cart, the first Rath Yatra. Prabhupada couldn't come to that because he had had his stroke. But they had that Rath Yatra. And meanwhile, on the other side of the country, in New York, because everyone in New York thought that Prabhupada would stay with them forever. They didn't know that there was going to be any expansion of Krishna consciousness. When Prabhupada made his incorporation, he said that we would establish a place of pilgrimage. So they thought that 22nd Avenue was that place of pilgrimage. They didn't understand Prabhupada's broad vision. So when Prabhupada left to go to San Francisco for this big concert, suddenly nobody knew what Prabhupada was doing. Everything. He was giving the lectures, he was leading the kirtans, he was leading the Sankirtan into Tompkins Square Park on the weekends. He was feeding, he was serving out the prasadam. So now they had to all fill in for Prabhupada. So Brahmananda, he was the temple president. Prabhupada called him the mountain of the mission. He decided who would do what. So they decided that Ray Ram, he would give the lectures because he had read the books. And one person would do the kirtans, Brahmananda, he would lead the sankirtan. And in that way, although they were feeling, because Prabhupada had spoken about service and separation, although they were feeling great separation from Prabhupada, they learned, and he wrote to Prabhupada, that now we're understanding what service and separation is. But they wanted Prabhupada to come back. So finally, after setting up the Radha Krishna Temple in San Francisco, he left it in the hands of Haridas. Now Haridas, because he could understand the Western mentality, the West Coast mentality, just next to them on the other side of the wall were people called the diggers. They were like the food for life of the hippies. They would hand out free food. And the Hell's Angels would come to visit. Now Haridas, he knew how to deal with everyone. And a lot of people, let's say 125% of all the people there were taking intoxication. So he knew that intoxication, you couldn't tell the people to stop, the newcomers, because they would all come for free food. So Prabhupada would be giving a lecture. He was giving a lecture one day. One hippie comes in, and Prabhupada's giving the lecture, and the hippie stands up and says, "I am God." And throughout the whole lecture, he was yelling, "I am God, 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 God." And Prabhupada didn't even blink an eye. He just went on with his lecture. And then he asked for questions, and Hayagriva was visiting. He followed Prabhupada. And Hayagriva said to Haridas, he said, "Brahmananda wouldn't allow this at all. He'd just pick him up and throw him out." And Haridas says, "No, you can't do that here. Because here, anyone who takes LSD or intoxication, they're considered to be saints. So you have to just placate them, just ignore them." And that's exactly what Prabhupada did. He just ignored them. And that's what Haridas had to do. He ignored them because everyone was on intoxication on the West Coast. So finally, that madman, after screaming, he runs out of the door and nobody ever sees him again. So Prabhupada was very, very tolerant with the youth because as he prayed in his bhajan that we just heard, he said that they're so covered with tamagun and rajagun. And only you know how to lift this covering. And if you so desire, then they'll be able to understand your message of Krishna consciousness. Now you make me dance. So this was Prabhupada's whole mentality, that they have named me Bhaktivedanta. But where is my bhakti? Where's my knowledge of Vedanta? Simply, I'm your servant, and you do whatever you want as you like, just like a puppet and the master pulling the strings. So this was entirely Prabhupada's mentality. He had no plan. He didn't know what was awaiting him in America. And by his intelligence, by Sri Krishna's direct inspiration, he was able to turn all these hippies into happies. Now, one time a reporter asked Prabhupada, "Why did you make your temple here at Haight-Ashbury?" Prabhupada, he very soberly said, "Because the rent was cheap." So Prabhupada had a mission. He wasn't looking for just one type of person. He wanted to preach to everyone in the whole world. And as soon as he made disciples, he got them married, and he sent them out all over the world. He sent Burijan and Jagatrini to Hong Kong all alone. He sent Chintamani and Sudama to Japan all alone. He sent the devotees, of course he sent the six great pioneers to London because that would be the biggest challenge. Then he sent devotees to Germany, he sent them to France, he sent them all over America, to Canada. Prabhupada had such a plan, And this plan was coming from the direct inspiration of Sri Krishna. Just as Prabhupada says about his books, he didn't write these books. These books were written by Krishna, and that's why Prabhupada would read his own books. So this is a little prelude to the successes that Prabhupada had in his preaching, how he worked tirelessly, how we're sitting here today, all of us, by Prabhupada's efforts to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world, and how grateful we should be for Prabhupada's sacrifices. Hare Krishna. Okay. Are there any questions? Any comments? All right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. There's a question? Yes,
Prabhu.
Yes. I can't hear you. You have to come closer.
Is it better?
Yes.
So, Prabhupada is completely surrendered to his guru and Krishna, pure devotee, no karma, yet no disciples at that time, so there's karma. Why did he have to suffer from heart attacks?
Why did he have to suffer from heart attacks?
Because I remember hearing directly from the Pandusha Maharaj, one thing mentioned is that Krishna took care of the ship.
Yes. Krishna what?
Krishna wore multiple hats, played multiple roles.
Yes.
And one of them was Krishna was personally massaging the chest.
Yes.
So, in spite of all of this, why did Prabhupada suffer?
Well, the Vaishnava is prepared to undergo any type of suffering. For instance, we have the example of Haridas Thakur in 21, 22 marketplaces. He was beaten. They were trying to beat him to death, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was personally taking all of those beatings onto his body. Now, when Srila Prabhupada had his heart attacks, after the second heart attack, Prabhupada, he said later that if one more had come, he would have certainly died. But instead of one more coming, he had a dream where he saw Krishna and all of the avatars on the boat with him. So sometimes Krishna puts his devotee through intense suffering, what appears to be suffering, but that suffering is not like the suffering from karma or some sinful reactions. That so-called suffering is so that the devotee can take complete shelter of the Supreme Lord. And then the Supreme Lord, he fully reciprocates with that devotee by taking full charge of the situation. So in that same light, Prabhupada was on the point of death, and then Krishna took complete charge. And it wasn't that only Prabhupada noticed that. Everyone on the boat said to Prabhupada, "It's because of you that we've had such a calm journey." So it was confirmed externally also that Krishna had taken charge of the boat. Yes, there might have been some apparent inconvenience for Prabhupada by having the heart attacks. He had fasted the whole day on Ekadasi. He couldn't eat on Dwadasi. Then he had his heart attacks. Naturally, there was intense weakness, such seasickness. But this was all to bring Prabhupada to that point of total, complete dependence on the Supreme Lord. And then the Supreme Lord personally manifested himself to Prabhupada on that boat.
Okay. Hare Krishna.